Hi, my name is Alan Phillips, and I am super excited to be here today with Rachel Russell Sager, the founder of Style Saves, the fashion director of Miansai, a super, super talented stylist who I met 10 years ago doing photo shoots down in Miami before there was anyone interesting in Miami. She is also the mother of three, with a fourth coming in 2 weeks, and a global traveler who seems like she's in a new country every month. I am super excited to have you, Rachel. It's pretty impressive that you're able to take on all of these things at one time and be a mother to three and almost four children. And the question I have for you is, how in God's name do you do all this stuff?
First of all, thank you for having me. How do I do it all? I clearly hate free time.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I have trouble saying no. I'm a Virgo. So I'm
a Virgo. My wife is a Virgo too.
Yeah, we're psychotic. Yeah. So like we are totally OCD. We, you know.
Very judgmental.
Actually, I'm the least judgmental person that you would
really?
Ever meet.
Yeah. Amazing.
Like you can tell me gossip and like you can feel safe that it will never go anywhere. Like,
well, I don't mean it that way. I mean it like more like the if you see something that's not right, you have to make it.
I have a very low tolerance for incompetence. So yeah. I operate at a really high functioning pace. I'm able
clearly.
To manage and delegate. Those are like two of my strong suits. So if I see someone who can't keep up, then I gotta let them go. It's yeah. like in my house, you know, the at work, but I don't play any games. It's either you're in or you're out.
So you have a lot of things going on, and obviously being pregnant is kind of like a as far as I can tell, and obviously can't speak to it, but it's definitely an overwhelming, almost out-of-body experience, like the fact that you're creating a life inside of you right now. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I would say it's very much in-body, actually.
Yes, I thought you were going to say that.
Definitely nothing out-of-body about
it. So but it's very all-encompassing.
Totally.
And so you have all these other things that you do, though, and like I know that even if I tried to book my three kids and my wife on a flight to go somewhere, that is like sometimes overwhelming. So how is it that you're able to manage, and like, what do you spend your time on? Like, how do you know what you're spending your time on?
Well, first of all, in terms of like traveling with kids and like, you know, managing the children aspect, because kids alone is a full-time job.
Yeah.
I have patience and a lot of it. I don't ever lose my cool. Like, I'm very level-headed. I'm very thoughtful in my responses with them, because as you know, like, they can't really regulate their emotions or their reactions. So with kids, I try and remember that, and you know, I don't let it bother me.
They can't regulate their responses.
No,
but you're saying like you've figured out a way to regulate yours.
Yeah, I don't let it bother me. Like, I, you know, I'm strict with them in a sense where I expect certain things from them. Like, they have to get dressed before we go downstairs to breakfast. They need to, you know, do certain things, sit right at the table. They all need to, like, you know, help around, like, little things, cleaning up. But, you know, if they're going to be fighting over the truck, like, may the best kid win. Like, I'm not going to get in the way.
So you have boys, girls?
So I have a 5-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old son, a 1-year-old son, and another boy on the way.
Oh, wow. So you went tight. So one girl, though, only.
One girl. So I'll have
four. So we're the same.
We're going to
have the same. But I don't know how you have them all under five.
God's plan, not mine.
Yeah. I had two under two. That was, like, probably the hardest, like, 2 years of my life.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, actually, you know, people always say, oh, my God, you're so crazy. Like, how do you do it? I say, you know, honestly, I have the worst memory. So that really helps. And I have a bad memory and a lot of patience.
I think we're programmed for the bad memory thing, though. Because, like, every time, like, I remember when my third was born, Sunshine, and, like, a year in on Sunshine, we were, like, things were very intense. But like now we're having four, it's, I think that I'm always playing this long game and I'm forgetting the pain, because I've like said the pain is temporary.
Yeah, but you know what they say, like the days are long, but the years are short. It couldn't be more true, because you know, when you're in it and you're in the thick of it, like I got woken up 3 times last night. I, you know, had to get all 3 kids breakfast in the car to school. Like the days go by so slow, right? But but then, you know, you look at it and all of a sudden the kids are 5, 4, 1 and another on the way. So it also goes by so fast.
Was 4 always on your mind?
No, God's plan. Like I told you, you know, even my husband and I never like had an idea. Oh, we're going to have 2 kids or 3 kids or 4 kids. But, you know.
So literally like you.
You know what I have to say? So my daughter was planned. That was our first one. Second one, COVID accident. Obviously, we were all home.
Yeah.
Then the third one, cruise planned.
Okay.
This one, unplanned.
Yeah. Our fourth, totally unplanned.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some people don't want to have like 4 kids. So well, we talked about this.
In Florida, you don't really have a choice.
Why is that? Why do you say in Florida you don't have a choice?
You get pregnant, there's really not any other option. So you
Have a choice. Okay. Yes, I get you. I didn't even think about that. But what I mean, though, is like we talked, and one of the things when we like happened into each other that day, and I was like, yeah, you're the perfect like first woman to represent the women of Miami on this podcast and like really kind of set the tone for what like we want to do here. It's weird because like I wrote a book. And a lot of the people I used as an example in the book, like creative, successful people, were men, right? And it's hard, like, because I relate to them, right? But yet, when I was a CMO, my last team was 80% women. And I personally, like, relate to women a lot more than men, I think because I was raised by my mom and, like, always felt, you know, like, respectful and close to powerful women. But I didn't know like who to get on this podcast. I didn't know who would be the right person who would like want to do something like this, but like would be, you know, representative of the community. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing. Like you really do represent a like deep cross section of a lot of things, being the fact that like you're professional, you're creative, you're an influencer, which I want to talk about too, because you did some posts where you said like people told you you couldn't or something.
Oh, yeah.
What was that about? Sorry.
I think, you know, obviously when you open yourself up on social media and there's going to be, you have to have a thick skin, first of all, but there's a lot of people who have a lot of opinions. You know me because I have a fashion background.
Yes.
That's all I studied. That's all I ever worked in. That's all I ever know. Philanthropy kind of has always gone hand in hand. We, you know, work fashion through philanthropy, and that's how we give back to the community. So my roots are really in fashion. And I think when I started posting more on Instagram, I was using it as a creative outlet because I do fashion all day. I just came from a photo shoot. So like, for me, I want to, you know, mess around with like my cooking. I personally like to cook, and you know, I like to edit the videos, and I like, you know, to kind of like play around with it. So for me, I was just having fun with it. But you know, there's always going to be someone who has something to say about it, like, oh, you know, why is she posting cooking videos? She's not a chef. Or, you know, why is she doing this? She's who does she think she is? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So
your cooking videos are good, though.
Thanks. I mean, they're by like, the way, they're my really food is good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
But
you're partly Italian too, aren't you?
I'm half Italian, half Portuguese.
Okay. I'm half Sicilian.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Half Sicilian, half Russian.
Jewish.
Yes, Jewish.
Okay. I'm also Jewish because I converted.
Oh, wow. Welcome.
So thanks. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
But yeah, so, you know, I think for a couple months I was kind of off because it kind of like put me off, and I didn't like the negativity of like people having something to say about it. And I was like, oh, like, this is so frustrating. So I kind of just stopped, and I wasn't posting, and I like really just scaled it back. And then I guess I was like, you know what? F it. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. And everyone seems to like it. It's genuinely like what I enjoy. Like I make a lunch or a salad or a dinner, and I just enjoy like making it look pretty or styling it, right? Like
the food looks really good. Yeah, I gotta be honest with you. Like I'm Wolfgang Puck wrote my recommendation for college. Like,
that's great.
I've been like a chef in a restaurant before, and I think your food looks amazing.
Yeah, I have no classic training. I've never worked at a restaurant. I have, you know, zero. So, like, I think people were just like a little judgmental of me for that. But at the end of the day, I don't care.
But you didn't like start. So, I didn't start doing this like because I wanted to create a media platform. Like, my first take on this was like, how do I get the word out about the marketing department and like the work that I'm doing and get more people to buy into it? And then we started talking about like Miami and hospitality and real estate and creativity. And it just like kind of was like, okay, people seem to like it. Like, we'll keep going. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about your background, but like, you've definitely created a, like, to the point where I think I've actually interviewed one or two girls, women, sorry. I've interviewed for jobs at the marketing department, and they've called you out as their favorite, like, influencer.
Oh, really?
Or like Miami brand, where
love
they
that.
Said, like, I really like, you know, Rachel Russell's Instagram or that type of content. And so there's definitely an awareness of what you're doing, but did you start out like intending to be an influencer, like wanting to jump into this world? Like,
no,
what was your thing?
At first I was just playing around with it. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna post my cooking videos. And I was doing it just for fun. And then like I had a few that started to go viral and I was like, oh, okay, like maybe this could be a productive hobby.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so let me use the platform a little bit more consciously. I've always had like not a lot of followers, but like I've always had, you know, through styling or style saves or my work with my Beyonce, like a following. So I was like, why don't I like try and like harness that and grow it and cultivate the relationships a little bit more, go a little bit deeper with everyone, because I think it would really benefit everything that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, it will help people to understand like who I am as a person and, you know, maybe what I'm like at home, the face behind style saves, or, you know, also, you know, how I became the fashion director at Beyonce and how, you know, I kind of intertwine that into my life as well. Also, you know, my family and I, we live nomadically. So we're in Miami for 4 months out of the year. We live in Puerto Rico. We live, you know, between Europe and Asia for the rest. So,
yeah, so
for us, I think that, you know, it just kind of gives people a little bit more insights as to who I am. And yeah, it's been successful so far, so I'm just kind of going with it. But it's a nice creative outlet. And you know how it is when you are a creative person, like at heart, having projects that keep you engaged or keep your wheelhouse going in the creativity. Yeah. Like, I enjoy putting together a beautiful tablescape or really cool outfits or, you know, a new dish that I think is interesting. Or, you know, kind of just saying what's on my mind in a aesthetic or creative kind of way. So, you know, that's kind of the content. It's really just a representation of like who I am.
So you definitely get a certain level of fulfillment from it. Has it helped you like professionally? Has it like, because in my opinion, there's nothing that can even touch social and content marketing from any other platform that has anything to do with marketing. As I've done marketing for so long, I actually think everything else is kind of useless at this point. But I'm wondering how it does it help you raise money for Style Saves? Does it help you sell, you know, jewelry for Beyonce? Yeah. Does it help you do everything you want to do?
So before I actually started to research and understand the entire world and how it works behind, you know, Instagram and TikTok and posting and, you know, how long the format should be, trending audios, editing platforms, collaborations, like all these types of things. Before you really understand it, running a business or running a foundation, you just don't know. And you're kind of reliant on like social media management companies or experts or whoever. So having that insight myself, editing my own content, filming my own content, I can actually see and understand what goes into it. I look at my analytics. Then I'll look at Style Saves' analytics. And I'll look at Beyonce's analytics. And I'm seeing like what we can do better, what trends we can do on which ones, because something that's good for Style Saves is not good for Beyonce, that's not good for me. So it's really helped me to evolve their social media strategies as well and be more informed.
Yeah, yeah. There's a guy named Harry Bernstein. I don't know if you know him. He's a big marketing guy. But he always says, do it to know it. Like when I was appointed CMO of Morgan's Hotel Group, I don't think I knew anything about marketing at all. And then I wrote a book and I went to go market it myself. And I had to send the newsletter every week. I had to do the post. And I learned more from that than being a CMO by far.
Yeah, exactly. Because you need that hands-on experience to really understand what's going on.
Yeah. It's wild. So this nomadic thing, I'm like kind of jealous of it a little bit. And like, I kind of pride myself on being a person who can, you know, figure out the systems to get things done. But I couldn't possibly imagine how you're able to live nomadically with three children, needless to say four. Like, how does this work? I need to understand.
So there's this big myth that everyone says, oh, when you have kids, your life is going to change. False, fake news. That's like something that people say that are misery and they want the company, right?
Okay.
So I think that it's what you make it. And for us, we decided when Sunny was born and the pandemic happened, we all went into, you know, our COVID life and everything. We said, you know what? Like, this time is so precious in our child's life. We said, what we're going to do is we're going to live nomadically until the kids are in grade school. And then, you know, we'll consider coming back to Miami full time, or we'll see if there's a way to make some sort of hybrid version of our lifestyle work. Yeah. So we kind of live every year to year. We're not like, okay, 2028, we're hard stop, we're back in Miami. So what we've been able to do is world school when we're outside of Miami. And, you know, we work alongside a structured school that the kids are also enrolled in full time, even though they're not there full time. And then when we're
a world school, is that like a place or is it just like a made up?
So it's actually what it's called. So
okay.
Homeschool is, you know, when you have a child that's like at home with their parent or, you know, they're in kind of like one standard place at any given time throughout the school year. They're just not going to a traditional school. World schooling is when you can be anywhere in the world. So, for example, we just were in Puerto Rico for 6 months. And we work with a teacher who works with the school here to make sure that Sunny, who is pre-K, is doing everything that they're doing there to be ready for kindergarten.
Okay.
Then this August, we're going... after the baby, of course, we're going to Bali and we'll be there for 2 months. So Sunny and Miles are enrolled in a kindergarten there. So they're going to go to a traditional school in Indonesia. And then in the afternoon, I have a tutor, a local girl, that will come and she'll also work in tandem with the school in Miami to make sure that like what she's learning is on point with the kids in Miami. So when we come back in the fall, she'll be on the same page as them.
So I think you're underestimating one part. You're incredibly organized.
Totally. But that's like the number one trait of a Virgo.
Yeah.
Like we're organized. Great at managing, good at delegating, and just really good at following up and details.
Yeah.
Organized
is like we're nowhere near as organized as you are.
And extremely high.
Either of us.
High functioning capacity. Like.
Yeah. We get a lot done, but like the planning of that is tough, like for me at least, or for our family, is the idea that we would have to find someone. We definitely need someone else doing that. Now you got help, right?
Like, there's resources. So, you know, there's different people that can help you to find different schools. You know, I actually found the kindergarten through ChatGPT, everyone's personal assistant.
ChatGPT.
Same. So I actually found the school, the kindergarten, through there. Mm-hmm. The program looked amazing. So I put them in that. And then I've been interviewing like tutors that will come in the afternoon to like work alongside them for like actual serious scholastic stuff, studies and whatnot.
It's amazing. I think it's really, really admirable. And I think that you're going to look back, both you and them, as like, this is the most amazing time that you've been able to have
but
together.
But we love it. Like my husband and I, you know, when we first met, we were both at a point in our lives where we were traveling like at least a minimum of 100,000 miles a year, mm-hmm. both executive platinum. We actually like bumped into each other on a plane. That's like how we got together.
Oh, cool.
To Hong Kong. So for us, like this has always been who we are and we never wanted to stop. So we're like, how do we fit the kids into our life rather than like fit around a kid's life, which is what most people do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not what we wanted to do.
It's amazing. No, it's really amazing. So do you have family in Italy too?
We don't have family in Italy, although we have, you know, a great network of people that we've been, you know, like relying on and leaning into and like working with when we go there for years. So the kids have also gone to...
I'm just like taking snippets from Instagram, like that I can remember in my head. Yeah, so I'm like looking at your Instagram.
So the kids they did 2 years of preschool in Italy mm-hmm. on the Amalfi Coast, which was so sweet. They've done preschool in Puerto Rico for 3 years. And that's it.
Why? What's appealing about Puerto Rico?
My husband likes to surf. Okay. So Rincon, which is like the west coast of the island, is you know, known for its waves. It has like a much more chill lifestyle than, you know, let's say like San Juan, for example. There's no chains. Like you're not going to find a Starbucks. The closest Walgreens is 30 minutes away. You can't get delivery of anything, not groceries, not food. Our house doesn't have an address, so you have to go to a mail store for your Amazon packages.
It sounds amazing.
It's a really like grassroots like lifestyle. So it's nice because when we're there, we're in a bubble of our family and we're like cooking, we're hanging out at the beach. The kids are like, you know, sailing or doing horseback riding and we do like the homeschool thing. So it's nice because you really get to like engage and be like have that one-on-one time with your kids.
So you're staying in the same place every time?
Yep, every time.
Cool. You're close with Maxine too, right?
Maxie,
yeah.
Yeah.
She's Puerto Rican too. She sometimes comes and visits you or something.
Yeah.
Right. Maxie how far do you guys go?
Maxie was my college roommate, actually. I met her on Craigslist.
It's so wild because like in this world, like this, like Miami, people don't understand who don't live here. That like when you live in New York, it's you still know a lot of people, but you don't necessarily see them as much because New York is such a big city. So I'll still walk down the street in New York because I lived there for 35 years and I'll see someone I know and say like, hey, what's up? But in Miami, like everyone's like part of this same kind of community. And so you're always usually one like person away from someone else.
Totally.
Like no matter if, you know, the person is, you know, high profile or, you know, on your little league team or your soccer team or in your synagogue, whatever it is, like you see everyone like all over the place. And I that's what I love about
it. It's a small
Miami,
town.
Right.
And although it's a city, it very much has a small town feel.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. How long have you been here?
I guess like 15 years.
Wow. And where did you come from?
Rhode Island.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I heard a little bit of it come out in one thing you said.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Old habits die hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, you like have that, like you like have a very sophisticated demeanor. Oh, but I picked up a little bit.
Well, I think you can attribute a lot of my characteristics when it comes to like work and how I deal with people as being an East Coaster.
Yeah.
Like that's, I feel like directly comes from there.
So why did you come here?
The weather. I hated being like, cold. Yeah, it's just not my... I love being cold if it's for a recreational activity. I'll go skiing, all that stuff, but mm-hmm. I have no interest in, like, shoveling the car every day to go to school or work.
This is very funny when she says she goes skiing because, like, if you look at her Instagram, she's, like, skiing in the coolest, like, most exotic ski location in the world. It's like, you know, I mean, I've been around, I've traveled, I've been the CMO of a hotel company, and I've never been to some of these places that I see you going to. So yeah, you ski, but like not like upstate New York.
No, we went to like
Switzerland or something.
No, we go to
like something out of like the Gucci movie.
We go to Val d'Isère every January for a month. Yeah. Which is in France, and we like it because it's really small and it has a great mountain range, and uh-huh. it's a little bit off the radar, but then it's still like an hour and a half from Courchevel, So if you want to go party, you can go party. But otherwise, it's like a really nice, cool mountain town.
Sounds beautiful.
And then actually, like after we had cruise, we went to Niseko, which was incredible.
Amazing. I'm going to get to hear some recommendations from you in a second. But so Style Saves, tell me, how did this happen and what's it all about and how can people get involved?
So this is our 15-year anniversary, which is a big milestone.
Yeah.
When I started Style Saves, I was 23, and a lot of people were like, how are you going to start a charity? Like, you need charity. Like, you have no money yourself. I'm like, I don't know. I just want to, like, do what I can. And I've always been interested in being hands-on and volunteering, but I never feel like I could connect with the cause. Wasn't the kind of girl that was going to go serve food in a soup kitchen, just not my thing. I tried Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I did that for a really long time. But ultimately, I wanted to use my background in fashion to give back. My grandmother actually worked at a homeless shelter for domestic abuse survivors.
Okay.
So when I was growing up, I would like often spend weekends there with her. And, you know, I would see firsthand, you know, what the families had access to, what they didn't, what their circumstances were. So I always had a soft spot for, you know, people who didn't have basic resources, things like clothes, uniforms, backpacks, toothbrushes, hairbrushes, pajamas, like simple things that like they seem so rudimentary, like they everyone should just have these things or have access. But in the reality of it is they don't. And there's a lot of people that just go without. And then obviously being in fashion, it's very superficial, like honestly.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of like made it a little bit better for me. Yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'm doing all these photo shoots and big campaigns for brands, but then I would work with them and I'd be like, hey, if you have like these dead stock or this sample or this discontinued styles, do you want to like donate it to me? I can go give it to some families. So I would kind of do little things like that. In 2011, I did my first fashion show fundraiser at the Soho Beach House. It was the year that they opened for Miami Swim Week. I was the first and only fashion show that year, and I was the first person to ever do a non-member event at Soho House. Like, this was like 15 years ago before anything.
And Soho House, when it opened here, was like the best.
Yeah, it really was. It was just a great energy. Those first like 5 years were iconic. But I did the first ever fashion show there during Swim Week. And that's when I kicked it off with Style Save Swim. I did that program for maybe about 10 or 12 years up until COVID. Mm-hmm. But I used the money that we made at that fashion show to launch the program. Started with 50 kids. I would do individual styling back then. So I would, you know, have them fill out a styling sheet with all their like preferences and whatnot, age, demographic, et cetera. And then me and all my friends who were pretty much like in fashion or events, marketing, whatever, local Miami people, we would actually go to the malls with a budget. Okay, we have like 150 per kid. Here's your 10, here's your 10, here's your 10. And we would shop for them.
Amazing.
So I was doing that for, you know, some time. And then I think maybe around year 6 or 7, I met Isabella Grutman and she had just moved to Miami and was like looking for an organization to get involved with. So she heard about Style Saves. She heard about me and what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And we met for a coffee and we really connected over our shared morals and values and like, you know, willingness and drive to like want to help people who can like do absolutely nothing for us in exchange. And, you know, we do it from the bottom of our heart. We're not taking a salary. We're not like doing this for pictures. Like the only reason we're doing this is we genuinely care and like we want to see what we can do. And since her coming on board, we've gone from, I think at the time it was maybe like 500 kids I was up to, went from 500 kids and every year we increased. And now in our 15th year, we're at 25,000 and we're the largest back to school event in the country.
Wow. And it's huge. I mean, you guys have events a lot. Like you don't, I see them coming up often. Like it's not like once a year, like you're just doing that, only that back to school event.
Yeah.
Right?
So
like,
since the back to school event is our anchor event, we've, you know,
and it's huge. It's like a, like Mana Winwood, right?
So now we're actually doing it at the Miami Beach Convention Center.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. The space is great. We love working with the team, like the whole city of Miami Beach and all the mayors and commissioners are, you know, they're just so like willing to help, which is great. And we're going to have a 2-day activation, August 9th and 10th, which is a Saturday and Sunday, where all the families will come through. They'll get everything that they need. We also treat them to like a day of events. So they have, you know, the opportunity to get things like haircuts or see a petting zoo, or, you know, we'll have characters or face painting. We never wanted it to feel like kids were coming to make a line for a charity event and then leaving. We wanted to make an experience that the kids were excited to go to. So there's like balloons and there's streamers and there's music and there's games and there's slime and there's all this, you know, really interesting, like fun activities for the kids. They don't want to leave. And because we're doing such volume, we've actually, in the last 5 years, we've started private labeling all of our own stuff. So we manufacture and produce everything that we give away.
So Style Saves, it's like its own brand?
It is, yeah. So, you know, at some point, you know, we used to and we still do get a lot of donations. You know, maybe we'll have one vendor, like a U.S. Polo Association, they'll give us like 2,500 polos. But we'll use those as like an extra, because you never know if like what kind of sizing it's going to be or the color. So in order to really be able to scale the business and ensure the quality, fit, sizing and all that, we had to manufacture everything. So we make our own polos, pants, socks, sneakers, belts, backpacks, and 22-piece school supply kits, which come inside the backpacks.
Amazing. That is really, really admirable. Did you ever in a million years think when you started that this was going to be this thing? It's interesting because I'm interested in whether you had the vision in your head or not.
No.
No?
No.
Was there ever a point when you like realized that was possible and you were just like, okay, like pedal to the metal?
Yeah, and listen, I think that there is a lot of opportunity to scale and go nationwide. And I get asked probably once a month, oh, can you come in this city? Can you come in that city? But at the end of the day, like Issa and I are a really small team. We like to make sure we're doing something really well rather than a lot of things
half-ass.
So for us, it's really important to have a stronghold on our community. And every time we get more money, we want to put more money into our community. So, you know, this year for the first time, we finally had the opportunity to raise enough money to give the kids 2 polos because we're always giving them one. And we're like, you know, as a kid, you need a couple polos.
My kids make it through 2 polos in a day.
Mine too. but, you know, financially, we like couldn't afford it. And, you know, now this year we were able to do so. So that's something that like we could feel proud about. The year before it was adding on like a second pair of socks. So, you know, we really want to make sure that the kids we have here are very well taken care of before we take on anything else.
It's really, really impressive. So when is the date and what's the website so people can?
So you can follow Style Saves at Style Saves, the website stylesaves.org. We are doing a kickoff to our 15-year anniversary at the Museum of Ice Cream on August 4th. So we're going to do like a fun family day. And then the theme for our back to school event is Sprinkle City at the Miami Beach Convention Center on August 9th and 10th. So we'll be doing it that weekend, and we'll have 2 days of volunteer setup and then 2 event days. And we're looking for volunteers for all of that. And if you want to be a volunteer, we have like a group chat on WhatsApp you can get added to by DMing Style Saves.
Cool. Well, we have Sunshine Coffee right across the street. So
I love that.
If we can hook you guys up with some coffee or matcha or some other stuff, let us know.
Okay, well, I'm glad you offered because I was going to ask.
I'm publicly asking. I'm publicly offering.
Okay,
I'm
fine.
Here.
I'm glad we got
we're
that
here. I believe in what you're doing. And you said yes to me. So, of course, I'm going to say yes to you.
Okay. So I'm definitely going to need it because at that point, I'm going to have a baby maybe like 1 month old.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to need. Do you do the night nurse thing? Yeah, that's like critical.
Yeah, especially when you have 3.
I don't want to sound like, you know, uppity, but sleep is the key to everything, I think.
Honestly, yeah. Like
sleep. If you can sleep, like you can handle it. Yeah. Patience wanes if you don't sleep.
For sure.
Along with bodily function as a whole.
That's why it's so hard being a new parent, because if you're not sleeping, you like grossly underestimate like how it affects you as a person. Like,
yeah.
You are so much less tolerant and
everything.
So it's just terrible when you don't sleep.
Yeah, it's literally the worst thing ever. Someone gave me advice in the beginning, and it's never actually worked for me, but they said sleep when they're sleeping.
Oh, I know. That's such a ridiculous thing. It's like, well, when they're sleeping, I need to like shower,
yeah,
eat, change clothes. Like, what do you mean? You're going to be sleeping for 30 minutes. I need more than 30 minutes in the bathroom. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
So also, like, once again, I'm learning how to appropriately approach women's subjects here.
Okay.
But you have a girl gang. You have like a crew of really powerful friendships, from what I can tell. You mentioned Isabella Grupman. I forgot the name of the other girl. I met her at Sunshine too. Blonde.
Oh, Vita.
Vita, yeah. But like, you seem to have a strong group of friends, and not only are they strong in the community, they seem to be very involved parents, but like, it seems like, and I know this from my own wife with her friends, and she has her own group, like, female friendships are really important. And I don't think, like, necessarily as men we fully understand, but like, this crew is a strong crew. Like, how do they, what role do they play in your life? Like, how does that play into this picture that you put out in the world?
So first of all, girlhood is so important. Like, having a strong, supportive group of friends, especially them being mothers,
yeah,
is so important, because we're the type of friends that support each other. Like, I'm going to be cheering for them. They're going to be cheering for me. We're all each other's biggest cheerleaders. There's no backstabbing. There's no crap talking. It's just like genuine friendships that are supportive, productive. It's a good feeling. And we all have kids that are around the same age. We all have very similar values and morals. So for us, we're all very philanthropic and we care about giving back. We all have our, like, you know, some version of the same cause that we're interested in. So we often are able to have crossroads where we can kind of come together, connect, and like do collaborations together to even reach more people, help more people. You know, like we do the Bazaar for Good with Martha Graf and Chanda and Danya, her partner. So we're doing like activations with them, and then it helps us reach more people. We'll have a lot of support from other moms in the community, like Valeria or Camila, like all these girls that really utilize their network for good. And it's so nice. And it's just, I think it's really important. Like, we all as moms see the other side of it, see what it's like for us, you know, how expensive having kids is, all the stuff that they need. And then when you see moms that don't have anything at all, like, it just is such a soft spot, especially as a mom, because you don't ever want to see someone struggle like that, especially like another mom who can't do anything about it.
Being a single mother, I think is like hardest one of the hardest jobs you could possibly have in the world. Like, I have no sense of how difficult being a single mother could be until I had kids of my own. Like, it's hard enough doing it with a partner. I mean, I couldn't imagine. But anyway, the people just, they seem like good friends. From what I can tell. And it seems like you guys support each other.
Genuine friendships. Genuinely supportive friendships. And I think that's so important in life when you get older, is to find friends that are going to lift you up, going to support you. You know, they're going to be good and developmental for you, and you're not going to, you know.
Yeah, but negativity. It's so weird because, like, people have this, like, view of Miami in a way, where I think they look at it and they look at, like, many of us as if we're, like, living in some, like, fairyland where, like, all we do is, like, go to nightclubs and, like, go to the beach and, like, these type of things and, like, go to social events, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's true.
But I do think that, like, there's a really, like, and one of the reasons I'm doing some of this stuff is to, like, unveil, like, the substance of the city as the city expands. And I've never lived, like, I lived in New York my whole life. I lived in the suburbs outside of New York. I lived in Brooklyn. And, like, the community was great, but it is nowhere even close to the supportive nature of the community we have here, in my opinion. And, like, whether it's, you know, girlfriends, guy friends, like, going to the school, sports, like, everyone is, like, really down to help everyone in our community, from what I've seen. And that's whether it's people from, you know, huge means and influence, and people who don't necessarily have that, I think everyone is like, really feels like we're in it together. And I don't necessarily think that people understand that so much from the outside.
That's the main reason that Style Saves even works in the first place. Like, we never had a budget to be hiring people like publicists or, you know, people to do legal or things like that. Everything that we've always done has been very grassroots. So we've always had a really strong support of the community. You know, we'll do a silent auction. We'll get every single salon, you know, every single restaurant, all the hotels, because everyone wants to help. Everyone wants to give back to the community. And the good thing about Style Saves is you can see exactly where your money is going. Like, we literally are producing and manufacturing all of our own stuff. And then you can go to the back to school event and you can actually hand it out. So it's a really nice all-encompassing thing. It's not like if you just give money to one of these big organizations and you never see or think where it goes. Like, we're so transparent, and I think that's why we've been so successful. We give people the opportunity to actually come and help out and see everything in action, in motion, and that's why they can connect with the cause.
Awesome. So I want to ask you a little about Miansai before we get into, like, the 10 questions of, like, the standard what's good questions.
Okay.
But so your husband, I read, founded this in college?
Yes.
In his dorm room?
So he went to the University of Miami and at the time, like, wasn't able to find any accessories that he found cool or interesting. Everything was, like, very heavy, you know, maybe, like, along the same aesthetic of a John Hardy or you know, something like that. David Yurman, everyone was into that big chunky stuff. And he's more of a minimalist. So he started making his own pieces. He put them in Base, actually. That's how it was his first retailer.
I love this. They used to do all the Morgan shops.
They're great.
I used to go to Base on Lincoln Road.
Delano.
And like when I came from New York, I would always go there, like buy something from some more obscure brand and take it home. I loved it.
Exactly. And
they're still in Wynwood, but I don't really go to Wynwood that often.
Oh, but they're still around. And that was our first retailer. He, you know, put it in, went away for the summer, came back. Everything was sold out. Then at the time got, like, picked up by GQ. They started writing about him every single month, putting him on the covers with all these, like, big celebrities. And the brand really took off. Now, 16, 17 years ago, obviously, things were a lot different in terms of marketing. Like, this is basically when Instagram was launching. So if you went into GQ and you were on the cover of GQ on, like, a Brad
traditional
Pitt,
media,
traditional media, that's, like, you know, it pretty much, like, blew up the business. Then, you know, was able to get into, like, the Barneys and all the Saks and all, like, the, you know, the majors, and then, you know, a ton of small specialty retailers all across the country.
Not an easy thing to do.
No.
Like, very, very, like, the path is an unlikely path. I've been there. My wife's stuff was in Barney's and stuff like that. And just, like,
it's a lot of work.
Getting there and making money doing it is very difficult.
Of course. And just figuring out a business from the ground up that, like, you know, he's never even worked for a brand. He's never worked at a store. He's never, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's like me. Like, when I started Style Saves, like, I had never worked at a nonprofit. I had never hosted my own events. Like, but you quickly figure it out, and if you're smart, you can do it. And with him, he was able to build a really successful brand that, you know, is now headquartered here in Miami, sold in, like, 40 different countries, and has, like, a huge online business.
You still have the store in New York?
No, we just closed it.
I did, but that's a great location.
I know,
like,
so
great location, right time too, like, next to Saturdays, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
But they actually closed also.
They did?
The block's just changing. Yeah. Retail is changing. Yeah. It's not the same.
So Stephanie, who's my business partner in the marketing department, she had a store right there too called American Two Shop, which was open, like, around the same time opening ceremony was there. And The Smile, she was there for, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's why we ended up, like, I had hired her at Reef before we started the marketing department.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because I was like, I need people. I just always try to hire people with taste. There's not that many people with taste.
Well, that's smart.
In the world.
Yeah, we try to do that too. But yeah.
So so now it's a mainly, like, wholesale still and
direct to consumer for the most part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have, like, a big e-com, like, direct to consumer business. And then we still have a lot of international majors, online retailers, some small specialty, but the bulk of the business is online, direct to consumer.
It's so interesting because Another thing I feel like people don't realize is that a lot of things are happening in Miami or made in Miami that people don't, like, I know about Miansai because of you, and I knew about it because of the store in New York, but I didn't know necessarily it was a Miami company. And like one of my biggest clients is a company called Filthy Foods, and they make all like the mixers and the garnishes for like all the biggest bars in the world. And so they make like olives and pickles and like olive brine for dirty martinis and like all the major food group restaurants, everyone uses them. All like the number one bars in the world. Their actual factory is in Miami. It's in Miami Gardens, but most people don't know that. And I feel like the more people, especially with this community, know that, the more they're like even want to support it. Because you telling me this now, like me registering, it's like, oh, I should definitely get something. Like, I would be proud to wear it, you know, just because, more because of now that I'm getting to know you and the Miami. How long have you lived in Miami?
I've lived in Miami for about 15 years, but also I have a bad memory, so it could be more.
Where do you live?
I live in Miami Beach.
Didn't you recently move? You don't have to like, give
details,
but I'm
just wondering. Hey, you want me to put like, my exact address on here?
No. You recently moved, though. I feel like you did something interesting. Didn't you like do something interesting? Like, we don't have to include it. Like, the house or something like that?
Yeah, it's like so complicated. But we so my husband and I own the three properties next to the Standard. And that's like where we started our family. That's where we like got married. Mm. We love this property so much, but we just have not been able to get the approvals to build there. So, you know, now we're looking at other opportunities. So for now, we just moved into a bigger house because obviously we don't fit into our little bungalow anymore. But we loved being over there on Belle Isle.
So what's your morning routine?
Oh, my morning routine. So obviously I have three kids. The kids will not let anyone else help them get dressed except me. So my morning routine is I get them all dressed upstairs, all three of them, bring them downstairs, feed them breakfast, and then I always drive them to school. That's like my thing. So I always, you know, I want to like see them off. I want to be with them. And then, you know, I'll go and start my day, whatever it's going to be.
Okay. How do you take your coffee?
I only drink espresso from a mocha pot. I'm pretty traditional.
From a mocha pot? Was that like the little one? Is that what's called a mocha pot? Yeah, I didn't know that was called the mocha
pot. It's like the little Italian espresso pot, the silver one. So I only drink that in the morning. No sugar, no milk, just straight black espresso.
And you have matcha now? Because it sounds
in
like
the afternoon.
Afternoon and matcha.
Yeah.
Okay. What is a hidden gem in Miami that more people should know about?
For food?
For anything.
Oh,
usually people say something about food, but it could be anything.
Yeah. So this is going to be totally niche. And it's one of those, like, if you know, you know things, but, there is a place on the beach called Five Esquina and they have the best ceviche. I get the classic ceviche, medium spicy, and you have to ask for a side of rice. It's, it's on Alton Road next to Apple a Day.
Okay.
But my husband and I get it like two or three times a week for lunch.
We're obsessed. If you can't find it, look for Apple a Day.
Yeah. It's in a strip mall. It's not fancy. Yeah. You don't dress up to go there. But
everything good in I feel like South Florida is in a strip mall.
You know what? Fair. That's fair.
But I can't wait to try it. I love ceviche. I used to get ceviche 105 a lot. But
me too. But actually, no, I discovered this one in the last year and it's
better.
I mean.
The right when a great ceviche is like.
It's good.
It knocks your socks off.
It's really perfect.
It's like
perfect.
Really the perfect food. Protein.
Well, you can trust like, a pregnant person when they're telling you to get it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. So do you eat sushi while you're pregnant?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah? By the way, you like, I just want to hit this one too. Like, you go to Japan too, right?
Yeah.
Japan is like the most amazing place on earth.
Yeah, I was just in Japan last month.
Oh, wow. I feel like that's like, these are like really, really aggressive trips.
They are. That's
I'm definitely
true.
Like, you should write a book or something.
I'm just doing Instagram. Isn't that the same thing?
How to do this. What do you love most about Miami?
I love most about Miami is the community. It's like when you have like a good group of friends, it just changes everything. It makes it so pleasant to be here.
Yeah, I agree. How do you share your creativity?
I share my creativity through Instagram, through Style Saves, through Miansai. you know, through my children, through my food.
So everything.
Yeah.
Basically.
When you're creative, it just comes in all forms for you.
Of course. What personal experience has shaped your creative journey the most? These are the hard questions.
I know. I really should have. No, I was always the kid that like did the homework on the way to school. So
I could see that.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't have seen that because you're so organized.
I know. I'm like a type C though, you know.
What's that?
So you have like type A that's like totally neurotic. You have type B that's like laissez-faire. And then type C that's like a little bit of both.
Okay, right? So sometimes you're neurotic.
Yeah. Oh, I'm neurotic about like things that have to do with like structure, organization, efficiency. But then, like I said, if it, you know, if the it rains and we can't have dinner outside, like I don't care.
I love it. That's good. So that's a good type C, makes sense.
So, okay. There's one time I was assisting at Vogue. I just finished school, moved from Miami back to New York. I was making no money. This is like when you could do jobs and get paid like less than minimum wage. And I was like working 20-hour days and I was really tired. We had just done this like big couture shoot and I accidentally misreturned these Mikimoto pearls to the wrong vendor. And the stylist came and fired me. And I told him no. He was like, go home. And I was like, no. And I was like, listen, I made a mistake, but I'm tired. And like, I'm going to go fix it. I'll go get them back, but I'm not leaving.
I like it.
And he let me stay.
I like that. I actually did something very similar.
Yeah.
Once I was working at a Myriad restaurant group, which is like the company by Nobu and Tribeca Grill. I was working, taking like reservations, management training in the summer. And I was working for Noah and Jason doing parties in the nighttime. And they were paying me a lot more money to do that than they're paying me. And I would show up late and they were like, yeah, they were like, we don't really need you to come anymore. And I was like, no, I was like, you're not firing me. I was like, no chance. I was like, you got to understand. I was like, I'm getting paid, you know, $2,000 a night to show up at a nightclub and you pay me like $20 an hour if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I was like,
well, that was a good move that you did there.
Yeah. But it was good that I like, that was exactly the same. Like, but that's like, the world is what you make it. Like,
for sure.
You're not a pushover.
No.
And I don't think you would be doing any of the stuff you're doing now.
Yeah. Like,
if you let people tell you what to do.
But, you know, it's about how you bounce back from them and, you know, figure it out.
So what is one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self?
The most important thing when it comes to like any relationships or, you know, whether it's personal, professional, is communication. So the biggest piece of advice is like, never be afraid to say what's on your mind, address the confrontation or conflict head on, and be really clear about how you feel and what you want.
Do you feel like you didn't do that at one point?
No, but I think it's really easy to, you know, like when you don't really understand like what the consequences of doing those things could be, and just kind of like maybe sitting back or like not being vocal about like your wants or your needs. I mean, for me and for you, like being a creative, we were like contractors. Yeah. For most of our profession. And, you know, contractors are always kind of like pushed over on, right?
People pleasing.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you're trying to make the client happy, you know, you're trying to make, but then you're like the last person to get paid. It's like, oh, yeah. It's such a thing. So I think like standing up for yourself, setting the boundaries, being communicative about like what you want and what you expect. And
I think there's a level of being a creative or a contractor where you get to a point that you're successful enough to be like, to say to a client or to say to someone you're working with and whatever it is, it's just like, no, like that's not a good idea. And like, cause I've always like, you kind of get concerned of being considered difficult.
For
you're
sure.
Always at this, like
of course.
The boundary of difficult.
Yeah, but like,
right.
and that's maybe when you're just starting, right? Like when you don't have the ability to say something. But as soon as you get to the point where you have a manager, you have your own company, you have a book of clients,
yeah.
Then you feel much more comfortable saying it. But of course, it's much easier to sit on this side of it and say to do that.
Yeah, but I would even say that just in general, though, having clients and having kids and paying bills, like I'm constantly in that like zone of like, how far do I want to push this one today?
Yeah,
and that's why I started doing my own stuff.
You have to know your worth too, because you know people will always try and negotiate your rate,
yeah.
or you know even like for Style Saves a sponsorship or whatever it is, and you really have to know like what your value is, like what value you're bringing to the table, and what your like minimums are to do something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to be like healthy for you.
I agree completely. It's a very powerful thing.
These are things you learn with time.
Boundaries, right? How do you define your success?
Well, I guess my kids, my family, and being able to help as many people as I do who can't do anything for me.
I like it. If you could collaborate with any artist, creative, entrepreneur, who would it be and why?
I mean, there's a lot of like really strong and powerful women that have inspired me throughout my career that I think would be amazing to just like have a coffee with. I've always really like respected like an Oprah, you know, yeah. or something like that. Or
she's pretty amazing.
And appreciated like the way that she's been able to kind of do so many different aspects of her industry, and then also have such a strong philanthropic base where she like has her schools in Africa and she gives back and everything like that. So maybe her.
Do you think Oprah could have handled 4 kids?
I'm sure.
It's interesting though that like everything in life is like a give and take. You know, Oprah's pretty, she's obviously extraordinarily impressive as a human being, and a lot of the things she says I believe very deeply in. At the same time, I think it's interesting to me as a father, especially soon to be father of 4, like the world of being a professional and having kids is definitely different.
Are you really hands-on? Like, what's your parenting style?
I'm very hands-on. I drive my kids to school as you do.
That's
every
so
morning.
Nice.
I put them to bed.
Ooh, love that.
In bed with them every night. Sometimes to my detriment, because my wife is like, you know, we gotta like hang, you know, it's 11 o'clock, why are you still like in bed with the last one?
Putting the kids to bed takes like a marathon.
Yeah,
so I always fall asleep.
Ours starts with sunshine, and then I used to put the boys to bed together, now I do them apart, and they both, one wants to listen to a book, the other one wants to do this. It's like,
yeah, totally.
And then all of a sudden they want to drink water and eat.
Oh yeah, they're so manipulative, right?
Yeah, like, everything.
Yeah, I want a snack. I have to pee.
Yeah, everything.
I'm itchy. You're like, okay, well, a lot of logistics when you have so many children.
That's what, do you know Andrew Barnett?
No.
And Andrew is like, he's a Miami lifer, and he's 3 or 4, can't remember, but he always says to me, logistics. He just like looks at me and says, logistics. He's like, yeah. My whole life is logistics. Who's picking them up? Who's dropping them off?
It's crazy. Before I go to bed at night, I have to send an itinerary to everyone. Like, okay, this one has camp here. This one has camp here. This one's getting picked up by this person. This one's getting picked up by this one. This one has tennis. This one has a play date. This is where they are. This is what's for dinner. This is what you need to pack for this one, for that one. It's yeah. psychotic.
You're what we refer to as a professional.
Yeah.
You're a pro. Like, this, what you do is like very much like pro level work.
Yeah, for
what
sure.
What you're doing. Like,
not for the week.
This is not like this is not amateur parenting. You're pro.
High level functioning.
Yeah. I mean, there's two parts to parenting. I think the first part, like my family has covered, is like basically I think our job is to make them feel loved and safe all the time. Right? If you can make them feel loved and make them feel safe from the time they're 0 to 13. If you get past 13 without like any major trauma, God forbid, like you've done like great, great work. And then there's this other part that you're doing right now, which is like, that's like, you're like on like the Michael Jordan type Tom Brady play here.
Definitely.
Where you're doing like a whole other level of parenting. This is like, we're going to take you to Japan. We're going to expose you
for
to
sure.
the world. Your kids are going to speak Mandarin. And like they're going to be able to put their legs behind their heads and whatever else needs to be done for like a truly extraordinary human being. No?
God willing.
So what do you believe? Like, is there something? Because I can give you one just from talking to you, is that you clearly believe like that like artificial limitations placed upon you like aren't real. Like the idea that you believe that you can travel, you can have it all. Like you can have a beautiful relationship with your husband. You can create businesses that mean something to you, philanthropy that means something to you, travel the world and raise balanced children and make videos about your toast. Like, there's a lot to do in a day and still be here while you're pregnant. Like, you know, I feel like a lot of people would have just been like, listen, after I have the baby, I'll get back to you, you know?
Oh, I think that for me, I didn't come from anything. I didn't have any resources. I didn't have family money. I didn't have any financial support. I put myself through college completely. I paid my own rent through school. So I always just figured it out. I was very street smart. And I think that if you believe that you can achieve it, you can. So for me, nothing was ever impossible, even though I didn't come from a place where it would have been obviously possible. So I think having the kind of mindset to believe in yourself is really what helped me to get to where I am. And then also I'm a big traditionalist in terms of like family. Like I love my husband. I love being married. I love my kids. I love having a lot of kids. I love being home with them, playing with them, doing like the traditional mom stuff, like, you know, cooking and bringing them to school, like just simple stuff. Like I love that. I love the simplicity of life. And I believe that it's so important to really take it all in and enjoy it and always make space to do those kind of things that are grounding and, you know, good for connecting and, you know, your kids' mental health and well-being as well.
So if you don't mind me asking, all of that sounds perfect and the answer done. Parents.
What about my parents?
Where do they fit in this?
My mom died when I was 26.
Okay.
She had an accidental overdose.
Okay.
My dad is currently, I think he might be, wait, hold on, let me say that again. My dad's a recovered alcoholic.
Okay. Interesting. So you made a choice to do the opposite.
I think when you're brought up and you have these circumstantial cards stacked against you in a way, society kind of like already pegs you as someone who's going to be some version of what your upbringing was. Oh, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Let me tell you, the apple is so far from the tree. Like we're in across the country. I'm across the world from that tree. And I think that what you have to do is you can either become a victim of your circumstances or you can use it as a platform to get away from your circumstances. And obviously I did the latter.
It's very interesting. It like unfolded the onion a lot further in terms of a lot of the things that you are and that you've achieved. Makes a lot of sense. Were you close with your dad, if you don't mind me asking?
Listen, I love my dad. Like he's a great guy.
Okay.
Some people just can't help their addictions. They can't help you know, their alcoholism. They can't help it. It's chemical. And even if like there's a deep down you want to do something about it, sometimes you just can't. And, you know, I don't have any animosity towards my mom or my dad. Growing up, it was really hard and I didn't really understand like why or like how they couldn't just snap out of it. But when you have an illness and you have that addiction, now in my older years, I can see it's not something that you can just come out of as easily. And I have no animosity towards them. Like even right before my mom died, I told her like, it's okay. Like, I forgive you. Like all good. And I really meant it. And I actually like, that's the last time I spoke to her, I said those things. So for me, I have peace with myself because I know that I don't hold that negative feelings. Like it's all good. And honestly, like if they weren't as messed up as they were, then I might not be here today. So, you know, I try and look at it like that.
Was your dad kind to you?
Yeah, always. He's so nice. He's like the nicest guy ever. Yeah. Like totally a happy drunk. Like nicest guy.
Interesting. Interesting. So interesting, by the way. Not usual, like necessarily content for this, but I think it's very powerful.
Oh.
I think it's really powerful. Like I try to get there. I usually do. But, you know, I'm kind of really happy we did. But really, really powerful in terms of like, because I think also like what you do with Style Saves, like, did you ever like feel that way growing up? Like you didn't have enough, like, in a way, because it's not like part of the, like, the talking points.
It's not. So for me, like, I always had what I needed. You know, I had a really strong and supportive grandmother that's still in my life today. She's like great grandmother to my kids.
I had a great grandma too.
Yeah, she's incredible. So for me, you know, she worked really hard. She would always provide for us.
She's still around?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
No, she's down the street. She's like picking up my kids from school today.
That's so beautiful.
So she would always, you know, she would pay for my school. She would pay for my uniforms. She would pay for my activities or camp, whatever. So I did have that support in my life. And I think that also made all the difference. But I can say when I was in school, I would remember seeing the kids that you could tell they didn't have any resources at home. And they would come to the first day of school and they'd be wearing the same clothes from last year. They would be like with the dirty backpack or dirty sneakers or dirty polos, whatever it was. And you always knew that those kids were not from a good family. They didn't have any money. Those were always the kids that were like had their head sunken and like looking down and were, you know, not good, like mentally stable, because they didn't feel good. They didn't feel adequate. And it's just like the genetic lottery in a sense, like they couldn't help the circumstances that they were brought into, but there they were. And, you know, I think about those kind of kids a lot and like how they were treated in school and looked at by their peers. And, you know, that's kind of like the cycle that we're trying to break by giving all the kids the same level playing field as the next.
I think that's really beautiful. I think it's really beautiful. So two last questions. What's your happy place?
Uluwatu in Bali.
Oh, I've never been.
It's great.
What's it? How do you pronounce it?
Uluwatu.
And why is it your happy place?
You know, it's just so calming. Like, Bali's changed a lot in the last, like, 15 years. I used to go a long time ago. And, you know, after my mom died, I spent some time there. And I was able to, like, reconnect and regroup. And it's been so special to, like, now go there in my later life, married with kids in, like, a really good place. And it's just so peaceful and grounding. And it's a good place to, like, reset. And also, it's beautiful, like, it has really nice waves, perfect sunsets, like great culture.
Sounds amazing. Do you have a favorite quote?
A favorite quote?
Something you say. It doesn't have to be someone else's quote. It should be something you might say often, okay, like that you say.
I know.
You know, mistakes are a must, or like something like.
This is, so my husband would say, like, if my husband was here, he would say, this is your thing. So whenever something happens to anyone, whether it's like, you know, there's a bus that's missed or a plane that's missed or a friend has an accident or breaks up with someone, whatever it is, I always say, this is just a moment in time. And he like laughs at me, but I'm like, you know, kind of like this too shall pass, right? Like, this is just a moment in time. Tomorrow you're going to move on. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe in a couple months, but it's just a moment in time.
Amazing. Well, Rachel Russell Sager, I would like to say that I couldn't have possibly thought of a better person to be the first woman on this, I guess, podcast or whatever the thing is called. But you are really a professional. You're an extraordinary person, very multifaceted, much more depth than I would have ever imagined us getting to in this short period of time. Although I hope that I can fully develop my own skills of doing this and hopefully bringing out these really interesting stories and people who are extraordinary like yourself. But I'm so thankful. I'm so appreciative that you came here. And I hope it's the beginning of many conversations we can have and a long friendship. And I really wish you all the blessings in this next child and continue creating amazing things.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be the first woman to be on your podcast.
Yeah, it's really cool to have you.
Thank you so much.
I think there's a lot to learn from your approach to life.
I appreciate that. Yes, good luck with yours as well.